Welcome to the 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast, a retrospect.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast, a retrospective. And today I am joined by a full team that, of course, is being Brennan, Nick, Mike, and Chris. How you guys doing today?
Doing swell.
Pretty good.
Doing great.
Well, you were doing great, and then I told you we're reviewing Devil's Due. And now we're getting downright infernal is what's going to happen here. And so we're getting evil around these medieval parts that we're used to. So what Devil's Due is that it's a interesting take on, well, hell. That's the literal. We're talking about hell today, folks. Not anything more or less. And like all the other books, it starts off with a rather interesting story, good introduction, as they say, to what goes on. But I want to start this off by saying in this introduction, you're going to be misled a bit. Up to this point, when you've gotten into vampire at all, Dark Ages or even modern, the Infernal's always been, well, infernal. Demons are bad. There's people who shouldn't mess with the Milton Bradley Ouija board and, you know, should have made sure that their pentagram of salt would keep a demon at bay so they could summon and ask you questions about life and does she love me or not before they sold their soul. This doesn't do that. Like, there's a different twist to it. What I'm going to tell you is if you're a fan of Demon the Fallen, clearly just Demon the Fallen is just stick with it. This book is obviously, if you don't have Demon the Fallen and you're using like Vampire Dark Ages or Dark Ages Vampire or Dark Ages Mage or Dark Ages Guru, any of the Dark Ages lineup, this is trying to pitch you an alternate version of, we'll say, everything. Of Demon, I should say. I should be specific when I relate to that. That's not throwing aspersions at, just that it's a little confusing. And I'm going to say that out the gate. So the intro story is very much like a Demon the Fallen intro story. And then it rolls into what I like to call Genesis, right? When it gets into the creation of everything. And before we start opening up story, well, what are we talking about, Bob? Why is it getting in the weeds? Well, what happens here is that this book drives off the bat and tells you the three distinctions on what to expect in terms of this book, what they're going into, of terminology. For instance, a demonologist is one who studies demons. They're not necessarily infernalists, right? A demonologist knows about them, knows of them, even knows their names, and would love to have a collection of little books that tell you what they like to eat at parties and drink, that way they could host properly or know when to run away. Then you have the Diabolus. This is one who summons and actually seeks to control demons. This is, some of you might add this, it was believed that King Solomon did this, but it was also told that he was permitted to because he also did it to angels, which, that's a bit of a misnomer. If he did it to angels, of course he could do it to demons because those are fallen angels. So that works too. So he was a Diabolus. Then there's Thrall. This is one who serves a specific demon through a pact. So that is literally what a person is called when they do. You, in exchange for your soul, here's some cool power. Why they give you three distinctions is because it's necessary. It's supposed to be deeper knowledge. There is a difference amongst them. But for the common layman in Dark Ages, you traffic with the Infernal at all. You're just, well, you're Infernalist. You are the enemy. You sided with the adversary, burn him, kill him, cleanse him, the whole nine. And that's where that goes. The book also has the theme where they want you to get into the idea of there's damnation and there's redemption. That it's there. And I know what you're thinking. Wait a second, Bob. Does that mean this book we can play something out? Yes. Yes, absolutely. This book was written as if you wanted to play a demon in a campaign where you could. Or if you played a thrall in a campaign where you could. And that's the point of the book. Why is that there? Well, you got to remember, this book comes out 2 years after the release of Demon the Fallen. Why we're reviewing it now isn't because it's part of the Dark Ages line when they released it. And it actually does deal a lot with vampire in one huge way that we're going to get to here in a few minutes. But to just kind of jump it forward, we got chapter one. And it talks about the powers and the principalities. And really what they're getting into is the origin story. It's talking about what happened. Now, you can't really skip it, but I'm not going to go through the ins and outs section by section. I wrote down something pretty comical that I was going to riff on a little bit, but I'm not going to do it that way. I'm just going to explain it to you and let these guys chime in here with what they got as well, on 2 points. There is a whole aspect of the Dread Genesis that they refer to. And they say this as if, in this book, it says God more or less sat around like an absentee dad. He's up there, chilling, doing his thing. He says, you know what? I want creation. I want some cool shit to do with it. How about this? How about you angels I got sitting around, you Elohim, get out there and make me something really cool. Something worthy of me. Get at it. Get out of here. And Elohim just go and do it. They have a monumental task put before him. Anticipate and guess what God's going to want done, what he wants in creation, and specifically he, what he wants all this stuff to be impossible and cool. So the angels do that. They go and make all of creation known, blah, blah, blah. Boom, you're here. Then God turns around and he says, you know what? I want you to do one more cool thing. I want some people that are my people, distinctly, are better than you. Why don't you go put mankind down there too? And that's where I took the needle off the record, and I paused. And I said to myself, let me get this straight. So there are beings of utter perfection that were made to carry the very fabric of the known universe, and they made it and created it. Yet you're going to tell me that God told you to make mankind, and mankind's better because the peace of God is with every single man that's ever created. And that makes them greater than angels. I'm sitting here reading this, and I'm like, I don't agree. Remotely. Not even slightly. For any fabric of horror to work out of this, already we've put in your mind, in this book, it's put in your mind, that somehow mankind is greater than angels. Right? And if that's true, where's mankind's power? That's where it goes to. Now, why I get to this is because this is the foundation of many arguments you've heard around the internet. I've heard around many mage campfires. Many places. This is the book that tells you that mankind, when they awaken, they're able to use the power that God bestowed upon them to use the keys of the universe, which is called spheres. And that's one theory. And this backs up that theory. The problem is, when you get to the aspect of, if that is true, and angels built everything and they knew what was going on, how could you be mad when you created, embodied, and provided life for you did everything. You knew it was already here. How did an angel know of jealousy? Is what this story, this origin story, doesn't define. How did they know of hatred? How did they know of anger? This doesn't make sense to me. They're either servitors, or they're these perfect beings. But where does this the seven deadly sins that they seem to encompass and embody, according to this tale, where does that come in? And this tale is even harder when you consider the fact that it's not given to you by a narrator that's in-game. There's no, like, theologian, church-going inquisitor who's preaching to the pulpit of the next group of inquisitors to go out and hunt demons that this is the story. This is coming from, well, basically, like, the authors telling you this is how it is. Because there's no one else they refer to as who could, you know, who did it. And so that gets very, very hairy. What do you guys think of the origin so far?
This is... it's way different from everything I've read before in, like, a World of Darkness setting. I'm going to completely ignore, like, real-world theology, I guess. But the origin story so far, it doesn't make sense to me as to why there would even be a rebellion at this point, right? And I don't see where it's coming from. I think it talks about it's stirring, but I don't see where it's even, like, sparking.
It has to be in that jealous aspect that they bring up. And, of course, per usual, whenever you hear this tale, and it's not the first time I've heard a story in this vein mythologically, it always stems from Lucifer leading the charge. Lucifer is the first one to stand up, say, hey, what about my divine spark? And then everyone kind of, like, stumbled in behind him, like, yeah, what he said. The way it seems to almost portray angels in here, and fallen angels, is that they're these perfected beings that are beyond emotion. Other than the weird things they have built into them, like their spiritual essence. But they only seem to be like this lens that focuses God's might into different directions and use that for creation. Almost like it's like the worst symbiotic, codependent relationship that you can possibly think of, where God gets to sit in his cosmic bathtub or his hot tub and kind of look down on everybody and be like, hey, y'all, how's that earth going? You know, and then they're just kind of sitting down. They're like, do you love me? He's like, you're the best. And they're like, great. Boom. Mountain ranges.
It's the truth. I mean, they throw that in there and it leaves you like, what's that about? But let's talk about that fall. That fall was not just Lucifer standing up and going, hey, you know, what's going on? What happens is God in his bathtub, as you put it, and I love that analogy, is still like, okay, cool, you made mankind, said, yeah, all right, I'm going to go to Eden, watch him play. There's Adam and Eve. I'm going to go play with Adam and Eve. And yep. While he's over there, Lucifer's like, hey, you want me to tell you what's in the manual, how to use them? And God's like, yeah, why don't you bring that over, man? You're pretty cool of you to have that. Yeah, I kind of made him. So, I'll show you how to use him.
Yep.
Why does Eve have all these holes and Adam only has one? And like, Adam has holes too, just different. Don't worry about that. That's a little gross. We don't get into that. It's not even important right now, you know. And God's like, all right, cool. So like they're naked, right? Like, so I'm naked. Well, God, you have no form, right? I don't know how to tell you that. You're like everywhere and everything. So like we're walking on you. I'm you. Everything's here. Yep. Hold up, Lucifer. Man's like me. You're not. Just remember that. And Lucifer's like, how could I forget? You're right. I'm not you. You're right. My bad. Because no, I mean, like, you're my favorite, not me. But remember, you're not me. But mankind is. And then Lucifer's looking at mankind going, I made them. They're literally bits of clay and idiocy. They're hairless apes dancing around in front of you, and that's what you're telling me? Okay.
That one's got a pine cone sticking in his leg.
Meanwhile, Lucifer has to go back to Cloud City, and all the angels go, hey, where's our back pay? He's like, what do you... guys, come on. You know there's no pay. He's like, we did this out of love for God, right? No, you did it out of love for God. You ever try to make a black hole? I did. Wasn't fun. Took a lot of effort. A lot of guys got winged. Okay? It was rough. And we did this with... Listen, we want our cloud money. And if you don't know what cloud money is, it's a precursor to Bitcoin. Right? They want their pay. That's what they're looking for. And Lucifer's like, okay, I'll go back. I'll talk to him. I'll see what's going on. And when he goes back to talk to God, God's like, no, you're not getting paid. The end. Now, I got to go to bed because I'm kind of tired. I've been playing with man all day. So I'm going to go to bed, do my thing. You guys hang out and chill. Oh, wait a minute. Actually, you guys get the fuck out of here. Don't touch my mankind. You leave them just as they are. Ignorant and simple. That's the way I like them. And you don't mess with them at all. And in fact, couple of you guard the gates because I don't want anything to happen to them. This part always bothered me. Protect them and look out for them. Well, if you made them to not be messed with, what's messing with them? What's this other thing that's supposed to come in and jack them around? I don't get it. But the point is, that's more or less what he did, and he goes to bed. Right? He's there, and that's it. And then that's where it says, like, jealousy and hatred stews amongst the angels. And it would, because when you're when Lucifer has to go form the local Elohim 101 union to oppose the non-paying God for their overtime that rightly was theirs for creating the universe, this kind of, you know, it gets a little hairy with what goes on. And that's more or less what happens, right? He goes back and they're like, we're going to rebel. Why? Because the angels discover fundamentally, the joke aside, that the bit of God in mankind can be harvested for energy. They can now, they can finally use at their whim the energy mankind gives to them to do what they want. And a third of the host is with Lucifer, and they're in the Garden of Eden doing just that, which is exactly what God told them not to do. So when God wakes up, what's he do? He comes in and goes, you sons of bitches, I told you not to do it, now get out. Get out of here. And he fucking throws him out into the wild and he smokes Eden. He's like, I'm done with this. Can't believe you. And then he storms off. Right? Like, what was that about? Are you just going to take off? And then immediately, kind of contradicts himself, starts talking about how angels are like warring with the fallen who were thrown out and like how dare they did this. And they're now going at it back and forth. And I'm going to skip ahead to the important part. Then they said Cain killed someone. Like, before this, they're building castles, they're building war forts, demons and angels are fighting in the background for eons before time was time. But then Kane comes up, and we know Kane's a vegan, so immediately he sucks, right? That's what God's thinking. Think about it. This is God's perspective. I didn't make this happen. God's up there, and he's like, well, I'm just going to go. I'm hungry, so I'm going to go to where they invented a churrascara. Got to know I love Brazilian steakhouses. So God's walking along, and he's like, okay, I demand a sacrifice. And look, you have all these cool animals to eat. So, you know, what do you do, Abel? And Abel comes walking up. What I have for you is steak. Garlic steak so good you won't believe. I have lamb. Have you ever had lamb? My God. Why I haven't? But you will today, and it will melt in your mouth. And you will... He does all these things. And God's like, oh, man, Abel, your sacrifice is badass. Cain, what'd you bring me? A salad? Who does that? Who does that?
Bob, it was the finest salad. It had
oatmeal.
Like...
I got
a quinoa and spinach,
right?
and blueberries.
And so immediately he tells Kane, go back to your CrossFit class and try again. And that's what happens, right? And so they separate and they come together again. Kane's like, hey, Abel. He's like, yeah, you know what I learned in CrossFit? What? We're actually doing MMA. And he chokes him out, right? Has him up there. You want to sacrifice? Oh, you know, but there's no one to tap out. There's no ref to come in and throw Kane off. And he's dead. And Cain goes, guess what, God? I did it with a bone. I never knew how to murder before there was a bone available to stab with. But God goes, you son of a bitch. You made me a... How dare you bring murder into my universe? It was perfect. And, you know, he curses him. But everything in creation feels this curse. And that's where I'm like, okay. And so for me, I closed the book. And I was like, I'm done reading. Like, I got to that point, and I'm like, I clearly see where this is going. And I can't... All right, but we have to review it, so you go back to the book, right? But before I move on from there, did you guys get a different take than my churrascara story?
I just wanted to know why murder was the sin that did it, right? Because clearly, if we're going to take the biblical account like whole cloth, there was sin before Cain's murder, right? I just wanted to know why, other than the fact that, like, vampires exist in old world of darkness. Why was it the murder that made God scar all of creation and banish his disobedient secondhand creations? And it, like, why was that the thing? If it was sin and rebellion and disobedience and blah, blah, blah before then.
I got to bring that up too, because up until Cain's murder, right? They mentioned that when the angels were warring with each other, it was pretty much like that old school war of, like, they line up and they're like, how about it today? Nope, not today. We'll call it another day, right? We're like, we'll take a look at each other, see whose forces are the best, and then go like, nah, it's not going to step in our scale. We're just going to step down. But they warred, which means at one point or another, there was conflict, which means at one point or another, there was something happening.
They never killed each other. They never killed each other.
Exactly.
Yeah, they never killed each other until Cain did it first, because apparently angels, just so dumb, they just don't understand the concept. They're like, wait a minute, we can stab him till he stops moving, and then we win?
Look, in my breakdance thing.
Breakdance battle.
That's like, right, Mike. Sir. That's what it was. He was popping and locking. They was, right. He was fronting and styling. They had everything going on, and the best dancers won. Everyone else got showed up at the club. That's what happened. And he just moved on. And that was a war. But then Cain came around and said, this is how you do it. Split, splew, stab, split, blood, blood. And, you know, they were like, oh, that's how that's done. No, it's a load of crap, right? It's literally, it's what? This makes no sense whatsoever. Now, add further, they're sitting around and they're harvesting this energy from God via mankind. They're taking it and doing all this incredible stuff to be able to war with angels. And then they have this ridiculous thing. They say that because they're down there taking all the energy from the mortals, which they do it via faith, right? That's really what it is. They get the mortals to worship them instead of God. And then you read it a second time like I did. Wait a second. That's not what they're saying. They're saying the angels are there as an interim. Continue to thank God, but thank him through us. So we're first faith contact. Right? Get how that is? Like, hey, you can go on. You can keep going to the rock, burning your best and killing your favorite oxen. Or you can just come up to me every morning and I can give you a hug. And we can have breakfast and tell me how great God is through us. You know? Tell us. And then you go from saying, hey, Bob, God's pretty cool. Bob Angel, God's amazing. Can you let him know that? I sure can, buddy. But it's me who's, your tummy hurt? Now you're perfect. Don't worry about that tummy ache ever again. you know, my food's boo-boo. Well, now it's the bee's knees. You're welcome. By the way, God gave me the ability to do that. Nuh-uh. Bob Angel did that. That's who did that for me. I know who to really thank. And the little ones come and give me hugs because it's ice cream every night. And everyone gets what they want through Bob Angel. And suddenly, God don't get to prayer no more.
So what it sounds like you're saying is the Fallen just turned worship into like a multi-tier marketing pyramid? Yep. Okay.
You got it. You got it. I like how you did that. That's right.
Okay.
Listen, it's a pretty simple concept, right? You know, they're the lens that channels this divine spark. And even though humans are just the dullest flashlight you have in the back of the trunk that you ain't changed the battery in probably like 3 years, it's just a tiny little something. You can nuff them together. You just might have something.
What's up, DJ?
Another thing about that is it pretty much gives you, like, as stupid as it sounds, it now gives you the background to Pennywise the fucking clown. Why? Because when you start thinking about it, right, it also mentions... Oh, hold on. It mentions that because Cain had killed demons now... demons at this point...
Speaking of murder, DJ's killing Bob.
Demons at this point now start to recognize that meat tastes better when it's scared. Because up until then, they were looking at worship a different way. And then they were like, wait.
It's so true.
Humans like to torture, and they did this, but it tastes so much better when we could just get it from them. We don't have to go through that whole process. We'll just shock them into it. And then this gives it, like, this like convenient excuse for them to say this is how demons just go the route instead of building worship, to just shocking them into fear, into just doing that. And I was like, oh, well, I guess they're Pennywise the demon is the way to look at it now.
That's exactly what happened. 100%, as it says. You know, they were like, we're all friends. At the beginning, like, we're all friends. You guys can come into our fancy castles. You guys tell us how great we are. I'll make all kinds of clouds. It'll be wonderful. None of the gingers will get sunburned. And then eventually, like, Cain just whacks the dude over the head with a rock. And they're turning around. They're like, wait a minute. How about you just kneel to me? And they're like, oh, my God. They're like, oh, that feels so good.
Yeah, again, oddly like a multi-tier marketing company. I'm having a lot of college flashbacks right now.
It's dangerous where you've worked. That's all I'm saying. All right, so basically, there's your origin story and what happens and why demons are demons. Now, of course, we know about the part where hell gets made, but the part's going to throw you for a loop. Understand, Michael comes down and wins the dance-off finally versus Lucifer. And Lucifer's like, oh, shucks, I'll stand to the side. And then God reaches down from the hot tub, and he just opens the door to nothing. Literally to oblivion, to where, you know, the basement of God. And he says, you now go in there. All you demons, get in there. And they're thrown in, and they shut the door. Not you, Lucifer. You walk around free, and you think about what you did.
Right.
And Lucifer's like, okay, I'm going to chill. Do my thing.
He just dips off. He just hit a corner, and God went to look around the corner, and Lucifer was already gone.
They on purpose never cover it. They say 666 demons were cast into the abyss. No other word is ever used for it. The abyss. Mm-hmm. And then they're, you know, they grow mad and tainted and, you know, crazy and hateful. But Lucifer bombs back centuries later, and he's like, "What's up, guys? Totally didn't catch you guys out in the darkness. What you guys been up to?"
Oh. I like that look, Vic, where it's like, oop. No, it's worse than that, right? Because they talk about how, you know, well, first off, let's talk about what a demon is, right? Here, this book says demons are pure spirit. I know what you're going to think. No shit.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, yeah, we get that. No, but like, no, seriously, they're of pure spirit, but it's corrupted pure spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They gotta sit in something when they come back from hell. They can't just hang out because they're pulled to hell. Right? They're literally the insane clown posse figuring out that magnets work. And that's what they gotta do, right? Here's hell, and it's pulling them right in. Now the demons have got a choice. And that's just how it goes. And they're like, oh, well, that sucks. What are we gonna do? He says, oh, well, we gotta put you in objects now. And it's more or less how it just says it, you know? And especially when we get to the fact that, much like Nick already alluded to, yeah, Lucifer comes back and goes, guys, it's been a while. I was looking for a way to come back, and I found these mortal sorcerers. These mortal sorcerers were like, hey, who are you? And he said, I'm nobody. Maybe I'm the guy who's been telling you that really the Greek pantheon of gods you worship are just demons. Right? They're just demons. Actually, I'm ahead of the game. That any of the gods that came... Here's what this book tells you. is that any religion that has come before the Hebrew faith was demonic. All religion was demonic before them.
So, worse...
Go ahead, Mike. If it's worse, do it. Spit it out.
Worse to me. Maybe not worse. They say that though they say that other gods are real. They say that the demons are simply impersonating other gods and spirits that really exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they say nothing else at all.
No,
which leads. Well, they do. Which, they do. They say they're fae.
Some of them, yes, some of them are fae, but some of them are just these other gods that are gods. Deserving of worship. These are faiths that have power and they're deities and blah blah blah, and the demons that take on their guises are only isolated to these small little regional cults, and they're just pretending to be
it's
Beelzebub or whoever.
It's worse than that, because you're way ahead of what I'm talking about. Stick to where I'm at.
All right,
we're not talking about when all the demons come out and when they start like chiseling at other pantheons. We're not referring to that. It's saying that when they came to the earth and religions were formed up, that some angels, some fallen, were not as demons. They were like, ah, worship me as something else. Why? Because it's implying there was other beings here. They fell, there were other beings here who just were like, hey, who are you? And we're like, ah, we're demons. Kicking rocks with humans. Oh, that's interesting. Here's the part you're missing. And here's the logic of it. How the hell did the demons not know you were here when they created everything?
Hey, they were gone a long time. Trust me, you ever been locked up in the pen for a good five or
before
a dime?
Before the pen,
come back.
Before the pen, Jack. We're talking they came down here amongst man. There was religions amongst mankind when the demons came down here. When the fallen came down here shaking hands, kissing babies, by what they tell you, there were already beings here. What? So yeah, the Tuatha Dé Danann. They're around here doing what they do. And yeah. Don't forget, there was the Fomorians were still stomping around in the dark. This is land of Fae, you're right. Why? Because it's a land of utter creation. Yes, they were here. And anything, if you could dream it, that's what they are. And that's the point that it doesn't tell you. And you wouldn't get completely if you didn't get these slight references to Changeling are in here or didn't read the Changeling books to get the full picture. But then you sit there and go, what? Okay, so you come down here and you're telling me the first time murder occurred was when Cain did it and he tainted everything. Wait a second. But the Fae were here, where the Fomorians were killing everything, tormenting everything, nightmarish landscapes, and it was only the Tuatha Dé Danann who were opposing them, literally the Fae, taking it to them, fighting it off. They don't matter. They don't matter because they weren't mankind. They don't matter because they're not a battery of faith. They don't matter because the demons weren't influencing them. Okay, wait a second. Now you go to hell, and you come back out, and Lucifer goes, I've been out here talking to people. And I met some, like you said, Mike, some gods. And as Nick pointed out, really, Fae, Odin, at this point, no one's caring. Right? We're splitting hairs. And they're saying, well, we're going to steal your worshipers now. And they're like, what do you mean steal my worshipers? Whoever worships me has my bounty, has my law, whatever. How do you steal that? Oh, no. I mean, like, I'm gonna, watch, it's really easy. We did it to God the whole time. I'm going to come up and I'm offering breakfast and I'm going to give him a hug. And it's real simple. Except now I'm twisted, I'm from hell. Instead, I'm going to give them power and demand servitude. And so, what are we saying? What's this book saying? Well, it's trying to give you a strong, any way you can turn, any creature or genre you go into, remember the demons are now tainted and corrupt. That's what's trying to hammer home. That they are utter entities of nightmarish proportions. There is nothing more vile than they. Why? Because there was nothing more perfect than they were. They were the highest it was, created by God's own hand. They were angels. Now they're fallen angels. So as the high as they were, it's as low as they've gone. And that's it. That's the moral to the story. Do you have anything else you guys want to add at all?
It covers it a little bit later. It's hard not to see this as Wyrmtane, right? Because they go into the abyss. They come out. They're beings of spirit. And everything, no matter what, is... that they do is pure corruption. Even when they do perform their miracles or things like that, the very essence of them somehow is corrupting. When they have followers and thralls and they work with them, they get corrupted as well. carrying on traits like Mori.
Well, here's the thing. When you think of them as worm-tainted, you can't. Because that's the lens of the guru. That's the lens of the werewolves, right? What it even points out here, the werewolves don't understand the difference. The werewolves see them, they're just of the worm and we kill you. And the demons even go, it's unfair! Whenever we encounter these guys, we can't hide and be sneaky. They sniff us out. They kill everybody. They kill everything. They howl, and they come in packs, and they rip us apart. There's nothing we can do. Well, yeah, demon, stupid. They're werewolves, right? You get vampires on the side going, what are you doing there, demon? Well, I got to get silver weapons and armor, and I got to but there's only one of you. Yeah, but I'm a fell knight of the ninth circle of damnation. I serve Belial. Like, Lord Asmodeus fears my name. And that's a get. And the rest of his pack are Red Talons. And they're literally racing which one of them are going to kill you out of that group. They got zero to give about what your cute name is. But who am I? I'm just a Zamis. I've been up here in the Carpathians since the Carpathians were Carpathians. Hey, Jack, we got a demon called Kapala right here. And Kapala's an entire mountain range which we're about to get into. And I'm just letting you know. That's great that you want to serve Bela and you're a badass. That's the second Hal. Who's that? That's probably like Duke Tenna, the one to go to the show. Look, for them, this is Christmas. They found you. You're this great corruption. You're the worm walking. And is that why they keep calling me worm? I'm not a worm. I'm a fallen being of pure chaos. I corrupt all the... Yeah, that corrupt thing is how they found you. And then they kill him. They utterly annihilate him. And the book talks about how werewolves just tear him apart. They don't care. There's no pageantry. It's you're here and you shouldn't be. Boom, you're done. Earth Mother says, smite you are. And I'm like, cool. At least they got that right. Done and moving on. Yes, Mike.
Well, I was just saying that this book leads me to believe that the werewolves have the right of it. Well, that the werewolf cosmology is a more accurate interpretation of whatever happened in the forever past. Because it makes more sense from their perspective.
I think it just makes sense from a very simplistic perspective. I enjoy that about the guru, right? They don't need to know all the ancient histories of what really went down. They know this is bad. We're going to kill it, right? I enjoyed like that any part good about dog. It. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Maybe it's because I'm a happy dog owner that I like him so much. I don't know. But I don't necessarily think it's more accurate in any way. I just don't think they really care.
Nick's got the face. What's...
No, I'm saving it for chapter 4, sir. Like, I'm just looking over my notes, and I was like, oh, damn.
So there's something to touch now, because, I control the ebb and pitch here where we're going to. I want to talk about Kapala now, because I already opened that bag. It's an excerpt anyway.
Kapala upon you.
Thank you. So Kapala is the first archdemon that's brought out of hell. And he's bound into the Carpathians. He's not just a demon. He's the demon. Mm. The way they word it and make it seem, there was Lucifer. Then there was Kapala.
Yep.
Right.
Then there was the rest of them. And Kapala was A-1 out the ground and into the Carpathian Mountains. Now, why I have a huge problem with this is because this is where we're into fanboy fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When you look at the Zamisi story and talking about Kapala and everything else, well... Let's look at it in terms you all can understand right now. This means that Zamis is such an utter badass because he punks Kapala. He finds Kapala. Kapala's like, I'll make you a deal if you can help me out. These evil McNasty guru threw me in this thing, and I'm bound. And he's like, nah, just tell me what you know. It's like, what? I'm Zamis. Tell me what you know. He's like, all right, yes, of course. You've submitted to my will. Thank you for Calden, and I will agree to your terms. You're bound to the soil? Yes, we will keep your soil. And we will travel around later. And that's it. That's like the high and low of it. Like there's no bad deal that Zamis has to make with Kapala. He doesn't get the crap end of the stick from dealing with it. And I said to myself, this is ridiculous. You're telling me that Kapala is this much of a badass. He's the entire Carpathian mountain range. Not only that, he is the reason the Zamis have to carry soil with them. Sleep in that soil. So... You're trying to say Kapala is the source of vampirism? No. We're not going that far. What are you doing, Bob? Bob, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I'm like, okay, cool. I read that, and that says, like, okay, check out number 3, where I just had to leave that alone. that's a tale. These are all like alternate origin stories you could possibly use. But you literally got a lot of work to do that wasn't done, I think, in writing this book up to this point. Because there's too much. The way misdirection works is you got to give us something that's a common story told from a source that cannot be confirmed. Right? Because that's the trick they've been doing this entire time.
Yep.
This book tries to make it almost canon. This is what happened. Deal with it.
Yep.
This is what happened. Figure it out. But as we're talking about here, there's a lot of, well, this doesn't fit, this doesn't. Now, obviously, you always have the choice to add or don't add, to use or don't. But that's the point I want to hammer home. It's not that it's unentertaining either. You can say Capala is that much of a badass, but just understand, you're jacking the Zamisi Antediluvian up that much more. See what I'm saying? That point gets dangerous. And then, now let's go back and look at what Cain really is. If Cain is so powerful that when he was alive, could God even kill him? Right? That's the question. If he's the birth of murder that affected all reality and everyone in it, how powerful is a human being?
Human beings are infinitely powerful, right? Because they have the divine spark in them. Which means
but
in some way, shape, or form, they have the ability to steer creation.
But how is it?
How is it what, Mike?
He's just beatboxing right now, quietly.
I think
his mic quit out on him.
Yeah, whenever he has a point, Mike does something. And
I don't know what it is. He like leans on the space bar or something. <It's>, hey guys, I just gotta say this. Cuts out.
Does himself in. My guess is there's a mute somewhere on his mic or something. Go for it, Mike. I hear you.
What I was trying to say, and I had this question all the way back in the history when they were describing all the stuff they described. How is it that humans are the only ones with a divine spark, with a piece of God, if all of the angels were empowered by God to create both humans and everything else?
That's
empowered by. They were empowered by, right? Humans don't need God.
But clearly angels, they couldn't have created the world themselves, or they would have.
No. What it is that there's two points that you're missing. First one is that the angels were made to contain the power of God as God gives it to them. See how that works? Yeah. Like they're receptacles. I fill you up with the power to go and make the mountains and the heavens. That's what I do for this house. And I give you the power to go and make the wilds and everything in it. Life, blood, everything. Go make a new universe, whatever. I give you the word, and you are the bearers of the word. And the word of God is the creation of everything. That is what that is. Feel me?
More, so that's more or less. Yeah.
Now, mankind, as Nick has said, God created man in his image. That's what it is. But here's the point. It's supposed to be God created man. But as you got clearly from this book, no, he didn't.
Nope.
No, he didn't. The angels created man.
They specifically said that it wasn't even God that breathed it into the divine spark into mankind. An angel did it.
So an angel gave what an angel didn't have with power that it couldn't access.
Well, bestowed upon him with the beautiful lens of, you know, like that came from behind. There was a bright shining light that came from the hot tub, shone down on them, and then they were able to do the miraculous spark of life that was breathed into mankind. Yeah.
In another way, Mike, we're all angels, and God tells us to create man, and we just got to go do it. We can't question it. So
we just show up to the job site, and then the pallet shows up with the bricks and the mortar.
And we're looking at the bricks and the mortar going, how the hell did we make... He said somehow this is supposed to become a human being. What's a human being? We said creating in his image. Yeah, sure, I got this. And so Mike picks up the whole pallet, slams it down, and just makes everything dust. And Chris is like, what did you do? Well, God doesn't have a form. He's everywhere. Like, that hot tub crap, that's just what we see when we go up there. That's like what he would like us to think of him as. And there he is, right? He's chilling in the hot tub. It's like a weird light party going on. I don't know what's going on. But that's what he is, right? And Chris goes, he wants it in his image. So what does he see him? So, well, he's in a hot tub. Clearly, he thinks he's like, some absentee landlord. Figure it out. And so Nick goes, cool, we'll just dump some water on it, and we'll make some clay. It's like, what? Yeah, just make it, just smush it together, and it's got some limbs and whatever.
We're just going to make it look like Bob. Close enough, right?
Just smush it together, figure it out. And then fucking Brennan goes, let's add a corn cob pipe and a button nose. Some two eyes. And then God's like, what are you doing over here? We don't know what you... This is what we got. God goes, nah, stupid. Here, Bob, pour this on it. Here's some light for you. And poof, there's Adam. Right? That's just what he did. Oh, wow, we did good work. Yeah, you guys know... Did you guys see the trick? Did you see what I did? We're going to need more God juice to do that again. Don't worry, you will. But did you notice what I did? No. Adam has his own God juice. So at some point, he's going to do something really cool. I wonder what he'll do with it.
You make it sound like this experiment of his was just like an episode of Jackass. I wonder what's going to happen next.
Isn't it? That's yeah. I'm glad you got that. That's exactly what I think this is.
Okay, so then my only other question is does that make Adam Johnny Knoxville?
Yes.
Okay, I'm happy with this.
Johnny Knoxville and Eve is the girlfriend of the week. I don't know what you want from that. That's what it is.
Yeah.
No, but in all seriousness, that's kind of what this is. It doesn't really make... It's not supposed to make sense. It's just supposed to be the pill you swallow to understand why they're here. And that's why we're sort of slogging through this, right? Because if we start talking about the corrupt flesh of demons and all that nonsense in the tainted spirit section, basically everybody knows this. They pulled on the most common tropes of demons ever. Because, yep. You know, they could possess humans, but they burn through the human. And, you know, there's these infernal relics that they create, and that's what you put in there, and are able to be here. They got rules for all that, folks. They got a ritual for the sundered soul, which basically tells you what happens to demons and Demon the Fallen. How they come up and are able to anchor into a, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. So let's get to what I like to call the important stuff. It jumps up into saying, what is in this book that you can use? And it's the Enthroned, right? We're now in chapter 2. This talks about your cults. This talks about their setup, what they are, the fact that they... Why be in a cult? What does a cult want? What can a demon offer them? And this is where relevance gets brought into for everybody. Right? In Dark Ages, what would a cult in the Dark Ages look like? This is some pretty cool stuff to start with, to start seeing what that would operate like. Again, if you're a fan of Demon the Fallen as well, this helps you realize how your own cult might operate, where it would come from, and how it would see you, with enough seeds of how to keep it going along. This will help you with that. The other aspects of it is basically how does a demon get in there and get them to worship? Because it's not just starting your own cult, it's how to infiltrate an existing like Christian cult. How would you do it and corrupt it? How would you make a straight-up demonic cult and get that going down? What if you have one that is a pagan? How do you slowly introduce different things to make it go to you? You get the idea. Corrupt, take over, make it your own. Thralls and Diabolus are mentioned in here as well. Now, Thralls and Diabolus is a section that just basically... just pay attention to Diabolus. I feel that the Thrall section, where it's good, if you've never heard of them before, understand that there are things out there that would traffic with demons for power or what have you, or knowledge. Those people do things for it. This explains it in the Thrall section. That's fine. Of far more interest to me was the Diabolus.
Yes.
Now, with that said, who wants to tackle that Diabolus section? And what I mean by that is, for me, the Diabolus were good for understanding how to summon and bind demons and the mentality of what that is when it's role-played. I found interest in that. Did anybody else get anything different?
I feel like the Diabolus are an intermediary. Like, it's the step before you become a thrall, right? Because the sensation I got was that nobody stays just a Diabolist for long. You know, you start off, you're a demonologist and you're curious. And you want to read some and learn some. And then that ambition starts tickling at the back of your brain. And you say, I bet you I can call one. I can make it show up in this room. We just got to, don't cross the line. You cross the line, you'll die. You stay over here, you're good. Don't cross the line. And then eventually you trip and fall into being a thrall. I like the Diabolus section because it gave us some perspective on other characters, especially from Vampire, who can bind a demon. I liked seeing the crunchy parts of that. But they seem doomed. Like they all have dark fate.
I think on my particular end that Diabolus happens to be probably the most biggest takeaway section about chapter two. There's so much talk about demons before, you know, and set up to getting to this point that you do take a look at the three things. You take a look at Thrall's Diabolus, but focusing on Diabolus alone, they don't have to be Thralls. One of the cooler parts about this is essentially someone with such conviction to be able to say, I care not whether where you come from, what you are, what power you may or may not have. I have the power right now. And then there's such an ignorance to their arrogance to be able to say, like, yeah, you're still bound. I'm going to do this. And if they fail, it makes for a great story. But I think this is I think the Diabolus section is better, if only because this is the crunchy part. I think this is the catalyst to what this book would fall upon. If you are in the center and you have demons to your left and thralls to the right, you walk that path in the center to kind of have it there. And the factions that are presented are interesting. They're definitely playable, and you could start seeing some of these actually show up in other game lines, Bite White Wolf, as well as through Chronicles of Darkness as well, in small spatterings, because it gives you the ability to be, you know, that person who walks with conviction.
And easily to understand what a Diabolus is, if you're still not envisioning it, John Constantine from DC mm-hmm. Comics, mm-hmm. he's a Diabolist, mm-hmm. right? Traffics with Hell to, well, jack up Hell. But that's why Hell wants his soul. Right, that's why the church wants to condemn him, and all that fun stuff, right? And even though he's an inherently good guy, perdition, right? The road to hell is paved with good intentions, and John Constantine embodies that. All Diabolus do. Yeah. That's the other point. The tragedy here is that I ultimately feel Diabolus become Diabolus from a redemptive point. That's the start. We got to do a little bad to get some good done, but that's you're already done when you start going that route. Because what does a demon do? That's their bread and butter. We're not going to use you to the end of it. And I will state this here. The redemptive quality of this book is if you throw out the entire origin story and never acknowledge it, just don't acknowledge its existence, this book becomes more enjoyable from this chapter forward.
Yep. Yep.
And it'll help you immensely with that.
Understanding how to do those like individual packs with demons, how to do summonings, how to do bindings, all that kind of stuff. That's amazing for any storyteller to have in their arsenal.
And this book tells you don't settle for them as canon. They tell you that point blank. I think it's at the beginning. They tell you this out the bat, that there are so many rites you can do and make up and be creative with, and they should be conducive to the cult they come from, i.e. never just spontaneously create a rite to fit. Do the homework. Make it worth something to be discovered and found. And what you'll have is now a story that's worth players going to look into and stumble upon. And this is also the point where I told Mike, you had a question for me, Mike.
Yeah, I was going to save it until we got to the... But it's more... Okay. So,
we can save it until later.
Because...
Go for it.
So thralls in this game, by the mechanics, they can start off with a level of power and investment from a demon that makes them rival elders, powerful ancient creatures from other game lines. And it's silly. But I feel like, Bob, you can put into better words than I can why a person shouldn't bother. And I'm curious how you would go about letting somebody get away with making a thrall as it's described in this text.
What I will tell you,
because I know somebody will want to do it. Irresistible.
Of course. And what I'll tell you is somebody wanting to play a thrall needs a real good story as to why they're playing a thrall and what that means. I.e., they're coming up and telling me, hey, I got this great idea for a new MCU character. I want to pitch to you Stan Lee, if I were Stan Lee. All right, I'm willing to hear you out, but you got to bring... Gotta bring it. It's that simple. You gotta make it real good for me to suddenly write in connections, tethers, and everything else to go with it to put that effort. But if in the 5 seconds it's just I want power, we're done. And I don't know. There are blessed few people, a fraction of the people I've met in my life over 20 plus years of doing this, who would ever invest the time or want to go that distance to have it. And so is there a way to do it to where you can do it? And that's the important thing. And I am saying this for my Kane bros, but understand this isn't really for Kane bros. I know some people might feel that, but this is mysticism. This is the occult. This is demonology. This is to a point. All this is playing with the powers that no one else can see or do that mess with the fragment of reality itself. And I'm not talking about mage reality itself. I'm talking to undo, to pull the threads that bind things together. Because you're basically, if you're a thrall, you're trying to what exactly for a demon? You're in servitude, no matter who that is. And depending if you're serving Belial, Asmodeus, or what's-his-face, Kapala, it doesn't matter who you serve. That's the important part for a storyteller. And so I would say to them, great, who'd you want to serve? And if they turn around and tell me Kapala, all right, so you're in the Carpathian Mountains. Already it's not playable. Our campaign's in New York City. Well, why do I have to be in the Carpathians? Because you're my thrall. That's where my domain is the Carpathian Mountains. You're there to serve me. You're there to better my hold and my cults and what I want done. But what if there's a cult in New York and you sent me? I can't reinforce anything that happens in New York. It doesn't work. And then the player has to go, all right, was there a way that we could do this where I can play something? No. So let's pick another demon. Right? How about a rival? How about something else? And right there is where that big negotiation works. And it has to be that. You don't have a choice. Like, this is something. No storyteller, and I will fight anyone, Dawkins, anyone, on this point. And I only mention him because Dawkins has a grand way of looking at things where if a player wants to play it, make a way for it to be playable. No, not here. I won't budge and be negotiable on it, and no storyteller should. This is where you make Game Enders, is out of this book. You make a Thrawn service to an Archduke of Hell, even by Demon the Fallen standards, the most powerful demons to run into is an Archduke. We're playing pool with the planets. You're wanting to wreck shop. At least you may not think so now, but that is definitely what your Archduke wants, and we'll find a way to do it. And so if it's looking to wreck shop and you're the tool to do it, now think of the other players. What's their fun going to be like, as every challenge for you is probably death or success?
I think it's a watch.
Right. Right. You get to watch is an excellent point, Nick. And that's the subtlety of it, Mike. What I'm saying here is that you have to do a lot of effort as an ST to get them to work for one player, and this has to be secretive. They have an entire book, and you got to keep it secret from everyone else because that's half the fun of being Infernal. Right? Is that it's a secret occult. Occult is hidden. And that's what it is. You should be the person with obscure, scary knowledge coming from a source that nobody knows, and that's your shtick. That's your unique snowflake. If everyone goes, oh, it was out of that Devil's Bargain book. Yeah, okay, great. We couldn't play then. Only one was for a lot in the campaign. So yeah, I guess that's you. And you want to avoid that stigma, you know? And if you think my group doesn't do that, yes, your group does it. Because it's human nature. You feel left out of a book that you didn't get an option to play from it. That's the problem. And in this book, it tells you, this is why you make a campaign of thralls. Right? That's how it works. I'm going to make a story based on you guys are in a cult group, you all serve the same demon, and we'll do that. But then I challenge you, and I turn around and say, if we're playing vampire, and you're already the villain, what's the point? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, that's the long and short. Dropping into my opinion aside, I'm sorry. Anybody else have a counter to that? Let me do that.
I don't have a counter to that other than I would love to play an Ocean's 11 Demon Edition game.
I was wondering, Bob, can we talk about redemption?
Yeah.
This part confused me, right? So there's rules and ways and thoughts about, say, you're a demon and you know, you pop out of the abyss and you're filled with hate and corruption and everything like that, but you somehow think, you know, it'd be great if I wasn't, right? What if I never fell into this pit for eternity and got all, you know, like mind boggled? And it goes through the rules of like the ritual of the Sundered Soul that you were talking about, where essentially you cut off your leg to get out of a bear trap. It's probably the worst deal ever you can make just to reduce your torment level. Why is this a goal that they would go through when they take so much of the book and they hammer away at how important it is that you are evil beyond evil for evil's sake, ever evil for evil?
Because this is the poor man's version of Demon the Fallen. That's why. In Demon the Fallen, and this is, well, that detail, that's DJ's pitch coming up, folks. I reserve, that's why he's quiet. He's keeping the voice nice and fresh for that alone. But in Demon the Fallen, redemption is a possibility, as in this book had stated that. But the redeeming fact of is when you come out of hell, what if you're tired? You've been in hell for like 10,000 years or eons, or whatever you want to say, and you're already corrupted and burnt and whatever. And now that you're out and see all of creation, what was it all for? You can't die. You were here when reality started. When is it enough time for you to realize, all right, I might have messed up? And that's what it says. Somebody had to figure this out and go, mea culpa. God, I was wrong. Can you just end me? I'm trying to do right. This isn't the mankind I wanted. This, I mean, we've messed up bad. And I don't know why, you allowed this, but that's your will. I don't know what's going on there. And it's basically a chance for you to play a very unique character that's going around with these powers infernal. Basically, to play John Constantine. That's what it is. I mean, it just dawned on me. For you to be the anti-hero. The person who says, hey, I screwed up my life, but at least with what I have left, I can now turn around and oppose the very people who... I want more enemies, so I'll take on hell and heaven.
Yep, that's... That was the exact quote. They say the ritual of the centered soul is what makes demons playable as protagonists. And the only way that that's even possible is that immediately you have to take a massive power hit just to even start. And then you can kind of go on this weird redemption track.
Yep. But it also says that, like, far the majority of demons are too afraid of A, being sent back to the abyss, or B, being totally unmade by the attempt, because that's what can happen if you fuck up that ritual.
Well, yeah. If you cut off your leg to get out of a bear trap, there's a good chance you're going to bleed out on the way back to your car.
Precisely. So yeah. Nobody tries it. Well, personally, I try to get along with the bear trap on my leg before I do that.
Anyway. First off, remember who gave the ritual the Sundered Soul.
Right.
Lucifer.
Yeah.
Lucifer. Right?
Yeah.
Lucifer came back and said, I found this for you. It might be useful. This is where I have a huge... Bob's massive problem number 18 out of this book is where it shows you that the authors were well aware that God has a plan and is well aware that all the info they offered, probably 90% bullshit, but it's enough for people to chew on. We're probably aware that Lucifer clearly was in collusion with what God's plan was and knew his part in it and made sure that it occurred. Think about it. He's chilling in the Garden of Eden, and Lucifer is his favorite angel. Why is that? He's the second most powerful being in creation. That's without contest. It's known. So you bring up your number two, and you tell your number two, here's what. That's all I'm saying. I won't get in the weeds with it, but it seems to me he was in on the plane and then turned around, kicked over the domino that started the effect, right? He's the butterfly wings. And God likes
doing it. The Al Pacino speech.
Right. That's what he wants to do. And why did he do it? Oh, well, Lucifer hates God. Does he? Or is this what it takes in the universe to keep it going? Think about it. If Werewolf is based on cyclical... sunrise, sunset from the opposing triad, Wormweaver and Wild and all that, and it ebbs and flows, and it's a constant flux of renewal and ending and birth. Okay. Well, then it makes sense also that you can look at all of creation that way. And that's what it goes. And what makes more sense? That when God made mankind his image and gave a sliver of himself into all of mankind, is that not a reason why God went quiet? It took all of its power in a creation that it made and decided it wanted to experience itself through the eyes of itself. And so it makes slivers, throws mankind out there. Live your life, die when you do. And then at some point it can come back, and it always could. It's omniscient and omnipotent. Why did it do it? Boredom? I don't know. What's Lucifer? I don't know. Right? You don't know. And that's where you get into the part of this game where it's like, okay, those people might be too powerful to define. Let's just agree on that. We can't know why, and that's God, and we can't know Lucifer, and that's why. So it's up to us as storytellers to focus the story back down to earth on the people wanting to play these things and being where they at and make that happen. So redemption's a possibility because of that, in my opinion. You just can't look at the huge picture and try to say why when you got to look at the small thing that you're trying to have done. Focus, grasshopper. All right. So when we get to the host of hell, and this is in chapter 3, we dance around the effects of torment, and this is where all the cool powers come into effect, right? And with that angle, I know who stands in this chariot, Mike. I know it's Danger Mouse time, sir, but this is your time to shine.
I'm not gonna rant and rave. All of the powers here are cool. They're in relationship to the redemption point. There is a merit called penitent, called 7 points. It's the big, silly, not really merit that's in every book that has merits and flaws, that allows you to sidestep everything the book told you about the kind of supernatural you're reading. If you're penitent, you're a demon who's on the path to getting right with God, and it's real expensive at creation, and we'll move on past that. There are mechanics, like Nick mentioned, for summoning and binding demons. They also present something in this book that I've not seen in another book. I found it interesting. There's a little mechanical back and forth that shows you specifically how a torture session would work. Because one of the themes, you know, trails going throughout the text is that demons cannot actually force anybody to follow whatever it is they want them to do in the moment. But all forms of coercion and deception are fair play. So they show you how to roll that out if somebody wants to role play the back and forth struggle while a demon flays their flesh. We come to Arcana. Some of those are innate, just stuff you can do because you're a demon. Demons and thralls, interestingly enough, can take an apocalyptic form that's got like instantaneous absolute terror effects, and it's Lovecraftian for some and majestic for others. There's 5 categories of active arcana. Don't think of them like disciplines or even like mage fears. It's like abilities that demons have that they can share. There's form, which lets you do physical stuff. There's glory, which usually a demon's going to use to change a thrall. If you're good at math, you can be really good at math because your demon lord said so. That's basically, you know, come on, Bob. There's the arcana of mind and soul. This is where really terrifying stuff starts to happen. Demons can kind of sort of diablerize one another. Depending on what their power is, they can inhabit a dead body to sidestep some of the rules about having to either be inside of a living mortal or in a stone statue. They can raise the dead. They don't need stuff like necromancy. They can just will the dead to rise and amble around and do as they're told. One of the things that stood out the most to me in this section, and we kind of touched on it already, is that a demon can give one of its servants abilities that are utterly demonic. Like, it can just tap you on the forehead and for comparatively little effort give a regular old-fashioned human being like a 5th-level vampiric discipline. Demons can see the future. They can alter it. They can do it for their thralls, through their thralls. It's extensive. This section of the book was surprisingly long.
Well, it was surprisingly long because this is the section where they're trying to sell home, get this book, because look at all the cool stuff in it. Yep. And you don't have Demon the Fallen, so here's an idea of what you could do. Here's the problem. I'll tell you flat out, the Arcane in here is actually cooler than what I've seen in Demon the Fallen.
Yeah, yes it is.
Okay, so we're kind of nipping here. That's why I said they're trying to sell the book through better, cooler power. I will let you in a secret, folks. No matter what book you get, ideally, they know it's going to be a seller if they could put merits and flaws and new powers in it. That's what's going to determine its purchase, is the interest draw there. And that's what I think this is. In fact, just full disclosure, I said it. I've never read this book until we reviewed it. I had said this repeatedly, and I held out for it. When I read this, I was like, okay, here's the keeper. You go through here, you see the powers, okay, I have an understanding. However, the storyteller in me goes, it's great if I ever run a campaign of this, but I think it would be better to keep all this secret That's just me. Keep it secret and let the players unearth it. That'd be more fun than here you have the power, go out and wreak havoc.
Yeah, and it says that some of the demons do that too. Some of the demons, they say, good luck, here's a thing I gave you.
Well, yeah, why would I tell you, go in the world in three words, have fun. Yeah, it kind of ruins your whole faith gathering, doesn't it? Just putting it down there. Now, it does get into, jumping forward, chapter 4 real quick, dealing with torment is what it's called. But this is more or less themes and how to break it down into Chronicle. I just said, I don't know necessarily what a campaign I'd run through it. Well, good, it tells you here. It tells you that vampires, mages, the Inquisition, werewolves, fae, goat, all of them. Here's how you might run a campaign for them in the Dark Medieval, with demons included. They then get into a very powerful theme regarding, like, if you needed to wake something, right? And that's the typical thing of infernalism is that you're bringing something out. You're working for something more powerful to bring it into the world. And they give you all types of angles that you go at it. And you kind of read it. Now, in here, if you understand, Bob, you're talking about Belial or Belial, the great beast, what that's about, what reason you could give for it, what you want to have going on. And another point of contention is, you know, never mind. We'll leave that alone. I just started to say it, and I was like, well, no, we're going to be in the weeds, so we'll stop that. But anyway, then it gets into notable infernalists, and leave and list those too. But other than notable infernalists, and I leave it there because ultimately, yes, they're cool to read about, at least I thought, but we won't get into them here. They're in the book. Enjoy that section. I still think Waking Horrors was a good section to read through just to give you a cool idea of what's there. But DJ, I want us to end on your point, sir. You ready?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, folks, one thing I definitely want to bring up is I'm a big proponent of trying to streamline everything. One of the reasons why Brendan and I are big fans of Chronicles of Darkness is because the system, the setting, everything is uniform across the way. This book almost like as an alternative. As we mentioned before, I don't even consider it canon, but what pauses me from thinking about it is we had this in Demon the Falling. This Demon the Falling came out about 2 years earlier than this. And now we have this information regurgitated back into us, but sold in a way that we normally would find at the back of Vampire the Masquerade Revised. If you didn't want to own the werewolf book, you'd have all the stats for how a werewolf could work using their rules. In this, we're given the exact same thing, which essentially is, with working with Dark Ages, if you didn't want to buy the demon book, we're going to give you a truncated version of what we think demon should be and just make you compete with your own product all over again. And this is the part where part of old World of Darkness or World of Darkness in general just kind of doesn't have anything streamlined at this point. Why would you want to compete with having Demon the Falling and just make this a setting book instead and only really focus on Diabolist and Thralls instead of saying, let's add the demon portion? And that just kind of blew my mind. Because when you take a look through chapter 1 and 2, it's all about demons, but in reality, it's all about Diabolist and it's all about your Thralls. And then in the event that you do want to play a demon, here it is at cost to this. And that threw me for a loop. If anything at all, my comments on are you're the storyteller, you're the player, however you want to play the game, that is completely on you. But if you wanted to play Demon, there is Demon the Fallen for that. And I would highly suggest looking at that. If you wanted to play Diabolist, I'd look at the book this way too. But that was my big point of contention I just wanted to bring up.
I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, I support that completely. Does this book work, though, for playing Dark Ages of any sort? And you want to allow in something completely unique, darker than really any of the other genres?
I think it does. I think it works for a strictly Dark Ages setting. I wouldn't like it as like a demon game. I would much. I can totally see you could play just Demon the Fallen in Dark Ages, but if you don't have access to that book and you're trying to keep everything strictly Dark Ages, this is a good approach to that. I would just keep in mind that this...
Nope, you just confuse me. I'm asking you straight up as Brendan. You have this book for Dark Ages, not Demon the Fallen we're referring to. Is this book on its own right here? Is that something you see of value in a Dark Ages game?
Yes, I do see this book as being valuable in a Dark Ages game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to agree. We ribbed on various parts of the book for various reasons, but overall, if I'm running a Dark Ages game and I want to give a thorough textured depiction of something evil, this book gives me pieces to do that with. And the parts of the backstory I don't disagree with, like everything else in White Wolf, I can just throw it out. I especially appreciate the fact that they give you, how do I say this? It kind of helped me to understand that trope of like the disfigured demon servitor, right? Somebody who looks warped and twisted because of their evil. I like it.
Mechanically speaking, for as many gripes as I have, the book is mechanically sound. I would definitely run it. The obelisks are very well written here. That's my take on it. I would pick it up for that.
It's good enough for a toolkit. Take the pieces you like, weave them into your story, use it that way. That's how I would do it. Pretty good and quick, easy way for someone who is not familiar with Demon the Fallen to get some ideas as to how a demon might think or operate. It's good enough for that.
I'll disagree. I'll be that guy. One out of five. Here's the thing. When I look at this book and I think of the origins, if the origins don't work, the rest of it doesn't. We're standing on mechanics at that point. And it's hot. It doesn't work. It doesn't do what I think it wanted to do. Now, to back Brennan up and why I stopped you, Brennan, is because I didn't do that to be a jerk. I did it to point out this. What DJ just said, this is a poor man's Demon the Fallen. Why would you do that to yourself? Because you were already saying, right? You walked in the circle to start saying, if I Demon the Fallen, I'd use Demon the Fallen. That's the exact point. Which means this book doesn't fit that criterion, but I didn't think that's what you were trying to say.
All right, can I expand on my answer? Because I kind of just left it as yes, I would recommend it. I would recommend this as a ST resource and not a player resource. Unless there was some idea of like a Diabolus-specific game. I think the idea of Diabolus and that just that area by itself warrants this as a good ST resource. Because at least for me, because the idea of a mortal that traffics with demons but isn't subservient, tries to like bind them, that makes for a entertaining story in my eyes.
For me, being a horror film fan, being any fan of all horror, that's my main hobby. When I look at this stuff and I read this, I really think that this is sort of it's a patch job. When you define stuff that should not have been defined, i.e. Kapala, it was better as a great evil, right, without definition. It's my whole problem with the Transylvania Chronicles is it tried its damnedest to define Kapala as sort of a mustachio-twirling villain, and that ruined it. It just didn't do it for me when it comes to that. To read it again, that he's now a Carpathian mountain-sized mustachio-twirling villain, he's used to be an angel? Oh, that too? That it starts throwing it out there when the whole point of horror is the unknown. That's like the key thing in any horror film. When you don't know about it, and that dread's coming, and that fear's coming, and you find snippets and little bits and pieces about the works of this great evil that could be coming to you, that makes it more scary for the audience. That makes it better and more entertaining then when it does that too. This book tells you as an ST, here's how you got to play these things. Here's the way it gets done. When I challenge anybody that I'm willing to bet that you can sit down and take 5 minutes of internet research and look up Belial and the many ideas that come to it and pick out a handful of things that you think are really scary about it and build a cult based off of that alone to have worthwhile thralls that come for it. Do you need all this arcana? That's the other question. I challenge it because I don't think the arcana alone should be what is needed for any of that, because the storyteller can make anything happen.
Right.
And at that point, if it's a storyteller-based character, then right there we don't need that section. However, having read this, owning it and having it, am I going to use it? Yes, I am that guy. If it's in my hand and I have it, I now have to find a way of how this fits. I don't have that option. That is the way I think of it. However, 4 out of 5 is great, which tells me that for us as a group, it's worthwhile picking up for people. Based on that, I'm not backsliding. I just gave you my personal opinion and the truths and the details, and everybody just listened to it. Any last things you guys want to add before we go?
Nah.
Not for me.
All right, everyone. I want to thank you for tuning in. This has been The Devil's Due, and thanks for coming out. We will talk to you next pod.
Thank you for listening to our 25 years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast. If you liked what you heard, please reach out and let us know on Twitter at 25 Years of VTM, at our email, info@25yearsvtm.com, on Facebook at www.facebook.com/25yearsvtm, or on our website, www.25yearsvtm.com. If you would like to support us, we can be found at patreon.com/25yearsofvampirethemasquerade.